Welcome, family, to Love and Liberation Meditation. I am Alicia Anabel Santos, La Santera, and we are reading The Seat of the Soul by Gary Zukav. And this is the foreword. Foreword to The Seat of the Soul, 25th Anniversary Edition. This 25th anniversary edition of The Seat of the Soul fills me with gratitude and joy. After I finished the manuscript 25 years ago, I sat with it, wondering whether anyone would read it, and if anyone read it, whether anyone would understand it. In the midst of these thoughts, another thought appeared, louder and clearer. It said, "Do not be concerned. This arrow will find its mark. The seed of the soul has now found its way to millions of hearts, and the arrow is still in flight. While writing my first book, The Dancing Wu Li Masters, an overview of the new physics, I discovered, to my complete surprise, inspiration that came from beyond my mind, non-physical intelligences that I could not articulate, and the electricity of creating consciously with constructive intent. I had never experienced anything like this. I loved these experiences, but for the most part, I forgot about them after the book was finished. The Dancing Wu Li Masters, which won the American Book Award for Science, established me as a popularizer of modern science. Many people expected me to follow it with a sequel, a son of Wu Li Masters, that would explain more cutting-edge science. Instead, my next book was about evolution, reincarnation, karma, and the soul. It was about emotional awareness, responsible choice, and intuition. It was about an unprecedented transformation of human consciousness and the emergence of a new power, authentic power. In short, the new book was about a new human species, its new capabilities, and its new potential. This book was The Seat of the Soul. It surprised me more than anyone. Everything remarkable that touched me briefly while I was writing The Dancing Wu Li Masters returned undeniably, unmistakably, irrevocably into my awareness. I discovered non-physical reality. I am still growing into that discovery. All creative people, which is everyone, require commitment and time and courage to grow into their insights. Inspiration is one thing, applying it to your life is another. Inspiration is one thing. Applying it to your life is another. My friend Maya Angelou tells me that when people tell her, "I'm a Christian," she replies, "Really? Already I'm in my 80s and I'm still trying." Like Maya, I'm still learning, still striving to apply the most meaningful insights of my life, and still changing for the better. Reading The Seat of the Soul 25 years after it was written was a completely surprising and deeply fulfilling experience. The book seemed perfect. Every sentence carried meaning for me. Soon, almost the entire book was underlined. I was thirsty for the words. They sank into me like water into dry sand. They nurtured and soothed me. The blessing that I felt when I was writing this book returned to me, amplified many times. I basked in it. I thought I knew it all. After all, I typed it, edited it, and talked about it for years. But rereading the book showed me that I had things to remember, more to learn, and much more to practice. The Seat of the Soul, brought remarkable people into my life. Two of them in particular touched me more deeply than I could have imagined and continue to support me in ways that thrill and surprise me. The first is Linda Francis. I do not remember the first time we met, although she does. We met again a year later at a small retreat where I was speaking. I remember everything about that meeting. I was surrounded by loving people, and I found myself pushing one of them away, Linda. I wanted none of the hugs she gave so freely. This was my first clue that parts of me were threatened by her, but I was not aware enough to recognize it. I could not escape her at the event. For example, a friend saved a seat for me at a concert. A different friend saved a seat for Linda, and the saved seats were together. I began to share my curiosity with her. Why was I pushing only her away? I shared my intention not to be controlled by this unusual repulsion. I will not refuse your love, I told her. Not romantic love, but the love that she so obviously felt with her friends at the retreat and that she held out to me as well. At the end of the event, friends invited me to join them for a cold splash in a waterfall. When they suggested that I invite Linda, I became irritated. Linda, what is this thing with Linda? Can I not do anything at this event without Linda? When Linda called me a month later to tell me that she was moving to Mount Shasta, California, where I lived, a decision that predated the retreat, I felt frightened and again curious. When our friends and I welcomed her to her new home, I was surprised to realize how much I had been looking forward to her arrival. I was relaxed, comfortable, happy, and open. We began to visit each other. Some of our talks I enjoyed and others I did not, but I found myself looking forward to each one. Several months later, the thought occurred to me, I think I'm in a relationship. Without the sexual interactions that had begun my previous relationships, new and different kinds of interactions began to occur. These were my first experiences of a substantive and deep relationship for the purpose of spiritual growth, a spiritual partnership. A half year later, about 20 years ago, she moved into my cabin, and our journey together continues today. In our years together, I have marveled not only that I love Linda, something I did not think myself capable of when we met, but that I love loving her. This is the experience that intrigues me. It is as strong in me now as it was when I discovered it. Where does that come from? The second person is Oprah Winfrey. She is the instrument that the universe chose to explode me out of the backcountry and into the larger world. I suspect that nothing less than that explosion could have done it. She took me into her heart, her creativity, and her famous The Oprah Winfrey Show. First, I was a recluse on a mountain, and then a few months later, I was speaking to 10 million people monthly. New friends appeared wherever I went in the world, thanking me for the show, smiling at me from a distance. It took me a long time to acknowledge that my life of isolation was over, and even longer to welcome it. During each show, Oprah and I sat before an eager audience and the company of fellow souls around the world. She introduced the theme, asked me some questions, and then with a gesture of her hand or movement of her face, turned the attention of millions of people toward me. It was terrifying and awesome, sacred and holy, are better words. When a national magazine pursued me for an article, she counseled, "It's only cotton candy, Gary. Only cotton candy." What could have described external power better? My adopted Sioux uncle, Phil Lane Sr., once told me after watching one of our shows, "Nephew, you are talking like the old people." That memory fills me with strength and gratitude. I am grateful for Oprah and to the universe for all of these experiences and more. In the years following my shows with Oprah, Linda and I co-founded the Seed of the Soul Institute, gave many events, wrote books, and developed long-term, in-depth programs for small groups. Now our passion for supporting people and spiritual partnerships has grown stronger than ever. But traveling has become taxing for us. So we have created new digital tools and innovative ways to use the internet, such as an ongoing support program, e-course, e-newsletters, an online spiritual partnership community, live videos, and the web addresses at the end of the chapter study guides in this book. Tap them in your ebook or type them into your browser and they will take you to the web pages that will help you further explore, integrate, and apply what you are studying. You will find all of these and more at theseedofthesoul.com. Linda and I still enjoy giving live events when possible, including our favorite, the annual The Journey to the Soul Summer Retreat. I hope that I will meet you personally at one of them. The internet is a reflection in the domain of the five senses of our emerging awareness and our connectedness. It does not create or even increase our connectedness. It is not possible for us to be more or less connected than we are with one another in life. Can a flower be more or less connected to its color? Let us enjoy this beautiful reflection together, and also what it reflects. The most difficult, gratifying, and thrilling experiences I had since publishing The Seed of the Soul have been my experiences of authentic power and creating authentic power, spiritual partnerships, richness of co-creation, and awe of life have slowly replaced my experiences of people as things and my tormenting journeys through anger, jealousy, despair, and unworthiness. I still encounter parts of my personality that are angry, frightened, jealous, superior, and inferior, but now I see them as opportunities to create authentic power, to choose anew. If I can do this, you can too. I know that eventually you will. The transformation of consciousness that is expanding our perception beyond the five senses, redefining power and showing us the potential of a universal humanity, is proceeding in full force. Each choice of fear, anger, jealousy, vengefulness is a choice to evolve unconsciously through the painful, destructive consequences that fear creates. Each choice of love, gratitude, patience, appreciation is a choice to evolve consciously through the healthy, constructive consequences that love creates. Why not choose the conscious path, the path of joy? Why not journey consciously to the seat of your soul, that place where you transform energy, matter with your intentions, infuse your world with love, and live there? All roads lead to home. Gary Zukav. That concludes the reading of the foreword to the 25th anniversary edition to The Seed of the Soul. This is the foreword to the first edition. During the years that I was writing the Dancing Woolly Masters, and after, I was drawn again and again to the writings of William James, Carl Jung, Benjamin Lee Whorf, Niels Bohr, and Albert Einstein. I returned to them repeatedly. I found in them something special, although it was not until later that I was able to understand that specialness. These fellow humans reached for something greater than they were able to express directly through their work. They saw more than they could express in the language of psychology or linguistics or physics, and they sought to share what they saw. It is what they sought to share through the medium of their work, and that drew me to them. They were mystics. That is my word. They would not use such language, but they knew it. They feared that their careers might become contaminated by association with those who did not work within the scientific model. But in the depths of their own thoughts, they each saw much too much to be limited by the five senses, and they were not. Their works contribute not only to the evolution of psychology, linguistics, and physics, but also to the evolution of those who read them. They have the capability to change those who touch them in ways that also cannot be expressed directly in the terms of psychology or linguistics or physics. As I came to understand, in retrospect, the magnetic quality that these works held for me, I came to understand that what motivated these men was not earthly prizes or the respect of colleagues, but that they put their souls and minds on something and reached the extraordinary place where the mind could no longer produce data of the type they wanted, and they were in the territory of inspiration, where their intuitions accelerated and they knew that there was something more than the realm of time and space and matter, something more than physical life. They knew it. They could not necessarily articulate this clearly because they were not equipped to talk about such things, but they felt it and their writings reflected it. In other words, I came to understand that what motivated these men and many others was in fact something of great vision that comes from beyond the personality. Each of us is now being drawn in one way or another to that same great vision. It is more than a vision. It is an emerging force. It is the next step in our evolutionary journey. Humanity, the human species, is longing now to touch that force, to shed that which interferes with clear contact. Much of the difficulty in doing this lies in the fact that the vocabulary with which to address this new force, which is indeed the eternal force, is not yet born. Let's pause for a moment, because my computer is getting ready to die. Oh, I'm so glad we chose this book today. This feels so much better. You know, not that the other book we were reading wasn't good. It just wasn't good reading for me in the morning. It's better for me to read it silently, you know, by myself. Oh shit, Chula. Damn, girl. Oh my goodness. Beep. Okay. Let's continue. In this moment and in this hour of human evolution, this proper vocabulary and means of addressing that which longs, let me bring you closer. That which longs to transcend religiosity and spirituality and assume the position of authentic power is longing to be born. We need to give that which we as a species are now touching consciously for the first time, a vocabulary that is not clouded so that it can be identified clearly in the acts and judgments of the human race, so that it can be seen clearly and not through veils of mystery or mysticism, but simply as the authentic power that moves the force fields of this earth of ours, as a way of talking about what we are and what we are becoming. I have used the terms five sensory and multisensory. Multisensory is not better than five sensory, it is simply more appropriate now. As one system of human experience winds down and another more advanced system emerges, the older system may appear by comparison to be lacking. But from the perspective of the universe, the language of comparison is not the language of lesser and better, but of limitation and opportunity. The experiences of the multisensory human are less limited than the experiences of the five-sensory human. They provide more opportunities for growth and development and more opportunities to avoid unnecessary difficulties. I have contrasted the experiences of the five-sensory human with the experiences of the multi-sensory human in each instance to make their differences as clear as possible. But this does not mean that the five-sensory phase of our evolution, the phase from which we are emerging, is negative in comparison to the phase of our evolution that we are entering, the multisensory phase. It is simply that it is now no longer appropriate. Just as there came a time when the use of candles became inappropriate because of electricity, but the advent of electricity did not make candle power negative. Who among us is an expert on the human experience? We have only the gift of sharing perceptions that hopefully can help those on their journey. There is no such thing as an expert on the human experience. The human experience is an experience in movement and thought and form, and in some cases, an experiment in movement and thought and form. The most that we can do is comment on the movement, the thought, and the form. But those comments are of great value if they can help people to learn to move gracefully, to think clearly, to form like artists the matter of their lives. We are in a time of deep change. We will move through this change more clearly if we are able to see the road upon which we are traveling, our destination, and what is it that is in motion. I offer what is in this book as a window through which I have come to see life. I offer this window to you, but I do not say that it is necessary that you accept it. There are so many ways to wisdom and to the heart. This is our greatest richness and the one that gives me the most joy. We have much to do together. Let us do it in wisdom and love and joy. Let us make this the human experience. Gary Zukav. And that concludes the foreword to the first edition.